Hello there, and welcome to KDL Stump the Librarian podcast, where your friendly neighborhood librarians put their research skills to the test to answer questions from you, the listener, or your baby sister, a forensic scientist, or a cartoon rabbit. I'm Jill, and I'm here with Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Jill.
We love answering your questions, so please send them to us at kdl.org/stump or email us at stumpthelibrarian@kdl.org. We'd love to hear from you. We would love it if you followed the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. When you follow and like our podcast, more people can find us. Top of the podcast question.
Ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Would you rather have to hop everywhere like a bunny for a whole day or crab walk for a whole day?
Can I choose neither?
Nope.
Okay. I would say hop because at least I don't have to put my hands on the ground. Like a crab walk, you have to have your hands.
Yeah, but don't you need to put your hands down to hop like a bunny?
No. Oh, bunny. Maybe I'm thinking of hopping like a kangaroo. Oh, sorry.
I think either way, you're going to have to put your hands down.
Okay. I'm going with hop. That's my final answer. How about you?
Yeah, I'm definitely hopping too. Crab walking is hard work.
It is.
This is really aerobic. I'd be exhausted by the end of the day.
Is that a core strength?
Yeah. Thankfully, we won't be forced to make this decision.
That's a good one. It's a thinker.
Yep.
Do I have the first question of the day?
You're up.
Oh my goodness. Okay, let's make it happen. All right. My first question comes from Maddie, who is 9, from Ada. And Maddie asks, why do we have fingerprints? Fingerprints are really fascinating. Maybe you've done some fingerprint art with an ink pad to see what your fingerprints look like. I don't know. At our library, we have a little stamp pad at the counter where you check out, and we get little fingerprints all over the place because it's fun. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, I worked in a school, and I had to get fingerprinted at the police station before I could start working. Mm-hmm. What a thrill.
Indeed.
Maybe you've heard that identical twins have the same fingerprints. Have you heard that before?
I don't know if I had heard that.
Is that true or false?
False?
Oh, we're going to find out.
Oh, I can't wait to find out.
Let's start with the how. Fingerprints are formed before you're even born, and you'll have the same fingerprints your whole life. Even if you injure your actual fingerprint skin, so you burn your finger touching something, or you cut your fingerprint will grow back in the same pattern. It won't change.
What if you, like, cut the whole tip off your finger, then?
Then
you're out of luck.
Your finger will not grow back.
Right. Okay. good.
Okay. It's because even though you can see your fingerprints on that very outside layer of your skin, it's actually encoded way deep in your skin. The outer layer of your skin is called the epidermis. There's an inner layer called the basal layer, and there's a layer in between called the dermal layer, and that inner layer starts to grow faster, and then it creates the folds and buckles in your dermal layer, and that's in between those two, and it's kind of like if you picture a sandwich getting squished together, that's what happens when your fingerprints are forming. It kind of squishes out when you're in utero before you're born. Mm-hmm. And those are your fingerprints. It might be affected by the amniotic fluid that you're growing in as a baby, the patterns that as your fingers are formed as they move about. Your genes have something to do with the pattern. So fingerprints in your family might share traits, but they won't be the same. Even in identical twins, they're not the same.
They're not the same. Okay.
Fingerprints are kind of like stripes on a zebra or spots on a cheetah. They can be similar, but not the same. And it's called a Turing pattern. That's the name of it. In animals and in people, it's named for a mathematician who studied the patterns and why they exist and what makes them so unique. One study I read said that the odds of someone sharing the exact same fingerprints are 100 quadrillion to one.
So not going to happen.
The odds are not great that somebody would have your exact same fingerprint. Fingerprints help us feel the world around us. They help us grip objects, and they also feel textures like a strand of hair or a grain of sand. It'd be really difficult to grip certain things like a pencil if you didn't have a little bit of grip on the tips of your fingers. Mm-hmm. Of course, scientists don't have one answer as to why we have fingerprints at all.
Of course.
In fact, another study that I read said that fingerprints have a rubbery quality that actually decreases your grip, but the sweat glands in your skin help your fingers grip smooth surfaces like a glass of water that's smooth. The sweat, oil, and dirt from our fingers, even if we can't see it, is what leaves fingerprints behind.
Okay.
The study of fingerprints has a name, dermatoglyphics, the study of fingerprints. Our fingerprints are made of loops, arches, and whorls. Loops are most common and will either point towards your pinky finger or point towards your thumb. Whorls are circular and might look like a spiral. Arches are like a hill or may look like a wave. The differences between these features, what makes them yours, are called minutiae. Criminal courts need 8 to 12 minutiae or differences in order to match a fingerprint to a crime scene.
Okay.
That's a lot of little tiny differences.
Yeah.
But humans aren't the only animal with fingerprints. Primates have them too. And one other animal that is not a primate. Can you guess what it is? It's a tricky one.
Yeah, an otter.
No, it's a koala.
Oh.
Other Australian mammals don't have them, so scientists think that it's evolutionary. Of course, say it with me, scientists aren't sure as to why koalas have fingerprints. It may have evolved from koalas needing to grip different things, like tree branches when they're climbing or sitting in trees. And then they'll need to pick a leaf and get rid of the yucky leaves and then put the leaf in their mouth. So it's a lot of very tactile, picky kind of work that they do with their fingers. Could a koala leave fingerprints at a crime scene?
Yes.
Yes, they could. They are so indistinguishable from human fingerprints that a koala could leave fingerprints at a crime scene that could be confused with a human's.
Ooh.
I know.
Interesting.
It's a great question. Another unique thing that I was researching was dog nose prints. So dogs have a unique nose print. They don't have fingerprints, but the ridges and bumps in their nose are unique to them. So at one point in history, before there were microchips, you know, people put a chip in their dog in case they get lost. Mm-hmm. Some people thought it would be a good idea to take their dog's nose print.
Oh.
And that way, if it ever got lost, they could find their dog.
They would know it's their dog.
Can you imagine trying to nose print your own dog?
No. Does this mean I can tell which of my dogs is peering out the window?
Yeah, because they leave that. Well, I don't know if what they smear on your window would be easy to identify.
True. It's probably not it's both of them anyway.
Nose print, but like we have fingerprints, dogs have nose prints. I thought that was pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
So you can find a link in our show notes to an experiment that you could do at home to find your own fingerprint patterns or those in your family.
Ooh.
With just a sharp pencil, some scotch tape, and a piece of paper. You can color on a piece of paper with a sharp pencil, put your finger in it, pull it up, and then use a piece of tape over your finger to pull off your fingerprint and then put it down on a piece of paper, and you'll be able to see it pretty clearly without needing ink. So you could try it with your whole family and compare how your fingerprints are similar or different to those people in your household. So check that out too.
That sounds cool.
That was a great question. Very fascinating. Fingerprints are amazing. Keep those questions coming. Thanks, Maddie.
Well, I have a fact of the day for us.
You do?
Yes.
Wonderful.
It is from a book that is called Welcome to the Mysteryverse. A World of Unsolved Mysteries.
It's a really cool looking book.
It's super cool. And honestly, so many of the questions in here are right up our alley. In fact, I think there's a question about hiccups in here, which we just talked about in our last podcast. And the topic that I am going to have our fact about today is about why are we ticklish?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not going to talk about why we're ticklish. The fact of the day I'm going to read from this book is about DIY tickling. So one thing that we do know is that you can't truly tickle yourself. You cannot. And here's why. A section of your brain called the cerebellum keeps track of all of your body parts and tips off the rest of your brain, which then makes your own touch register as less tickly. So your brain is saying, that's you.
Brains are amazing.
They really are. They really are.
Man. Yep. Fascinating.
And that really goes with the question I have today, a brain question.
Yeah.
And it is from Mason from our Alpine branch. And the question is, why can't I remember being a baby? It's because your brain.
Can't remember when you got those fingerprints.
That's right. Mason, thanks for your question. Mm-hmm. It's true. No one can remember being a baby. Scientists call this, it has a real terminology. Mm-hmm. It's called childhood amnesia. Mm-hmm. And although it happens to everyone, of course, they don't know exactly what is happening. But they have known about this phenomenon for a long time, since 1893 was the first written, this is the thing that happens.
Okay, yep.
Early studies on childhood amnesia were really simple surveys. These simple surveys showed that people's earliest memories were not before 4 or 5 or so. So let's do a simple survey right now, Liz. What is your earliest memory?
Okay, I do have an early memory, but I don't know if it's true. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
that's good.
I can remember being in the movie theater when our family went to see the movie E.T., which I don't know if I actually went on that adventure or not, but I feel like I remember being there. I was wearing a dress, you know, like I remember bits and pieces of it.
Yep, that's good.
But I don't know if it's true.
Yeah, that all you're saying is really good. I have that too. So I have two early memories that are both at an apartment that we moved out of when I was 4. And so I shouldn't really have any solid memories from being there. These are both very vague memories. Here they are. The first one is I'm just standing in the crib in the tiny room we all shared. And the next one is I'm standing on the sidewalk while my dad grilled. They're not very rich memories. Right. Again, I have no idea if they really happened.
Right.
I don't have a lot of details from them. But these, both of our memories, fit in with an early study done on childhood memory that shows that those very earliest memories that people kind of vaguely think they have less emotional or personal content in them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you question, is that even a real memory? And they did do a study where they've try to verify people's earliest memories, either with their parents or older siblings or data around it to find out, was that a real memory? Mm-hmm. And I've asked my mom before, do you think that's a real memory, me standing up in the crib? She's like, maybe.
I have no idea. Maybe. I know. I feel like I have asked that too. And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. hard to say.
Hard to say.
I definitely stood on the sidewalk while my dad grilled there. So do I really remember it? Or I don't know.
Yeah.
We didn't have a sidewalk at the next place we lived. So I don't know. Maybe I really did. So the idea of childhood amnesia is really interesting to scientists in several fields. Like child development is a place that they might be interested in, but also in memory science. Mm-hmm. Just thinking about how the memory works and how does it work right from the very beginning. Here's the thing. We don't have memories from those early developmental years, but we do not forget everything that we learn. So we don't have these specific personal memories, but during the first 3 or 4 years of life, we learn so much that stays with us, like language and motor skills. And we don't forget those things, or the people around us even. Mm-hmm. Those are things we don't forget. Scientists believe that childhood amnesia is caused by some way our brain developed as we grow, because it isn't everything that we're forgetting, just those specific personal memories. Childhood amnesia doesn't really seem to set in until children are around 8 or 9. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're around that age, you might have some very specific and clear memories of being 2 or 3, and that's normal. Generally, you just kind of forget those things as you get older. Or perhaps those memories are there, but they're inaccessible. Mm-hmm. Scientists aren't sure about that part. Right. Do you have those memories, but you can't access them, or are they just not there? Babies can form memories. That might be one argument that is like, oh, they just can't form memories. Well, they can. Mm-hmm. Within the first few months of the life, you can see, as anybody who interacts with a baby, that a baby can memorize faces and will smile at a face of somebody who they see more often or who they really love, like grandma. Mm-hmm. A special smile for grandma. In a study of memory in older babies, researchers had babies brought in with their parents. The baby would sit on mom or dad's lap, and then they would teach them to pull or push a lever. When they hit this lever, a train would move around the track. So it's exciting. And yeah, the baby wanted to do that, and they would learn to do that. And then they would have the baby come back the next day to see if they would remember. And they did remember to hit that lever again, and the train goes. At around 6 months old, the baby would remember one day later that they could touch that lever and the train would move. And as they got older, they could remember what that lever did for a longer amount of time. So the theory stating that maybe we don't remember things because babies don't make memories, that's debunked. That's right. Not the answer.
They do.
They do make memories, yeah. So it's a really interesting, Liz, whenever I answer a question where scientists don't fully know the answer, mm-hmm. it seems like there's studies that show why something isn't the answer.
Right.
But what is the answer? And I'm afraid that I don't have a great answer for you today, because this is still an ongoing area of study, and there are several studies that are being done right now about brain science and memory science. We don't know everything about how our brain works, just like we don't know why we're ticklish, right. But we do know we can't tickle ourselves. Right. Yeah. So we do know that our brains remember things like language and motor skills, but we don't have those personal memories, and we know it's not because we don't make memories. So we think it's probably memory loss due to the way our brains develop. And brain development is so fast in your childhood years. Our brains are actually always developing, even into our adult years. Our brains are still developing. But when we're a young child, it's developing fast.
So fast.
Yeah. And you see it when mm-hmm. you see a child, how quickly they start to understand things and learn things. And it's pretty amazing to watch, not just the science aspect, like the real child
physical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our brain has several different areas, and we're going to talk about one specific area today. It's called the hippocampus. That is an important part of our brain. It's important for forming and storing memories. And that area of our brain is always producing new cells called neurons. Again, even as adults, we're still producing new neurons in that area. But for a young child, it's producing more neurons, and it's producing them faster than we produce them as older people. Mm-hmm. Researchers were curious about that, and they wanted to say, is the fast producing neurons affecting the memory storage? So this is the experiment they did. I do not know how they did this, but it's interesting to me. They took adult mice, and they experimentally made their hippocampus produce more new neurons as if they were a baby mouse. Mm-hmm. Right. And what they observed when they did that is that the mice seemed to lose memory. Mm. They didn't have as much memory when they had all of that happening. New neurons. Mm-hmm. So it seems like when the new neurons are shuffling around with the old neurons and the memories, something has to be lost, and it's the memories. Mm-hmm. The study doesn't fully explain why we have childhood amnesia, because there are actually other parts of our brain that are involved in storing memories. So scientists are going to look at those parts next, probably recreate that same experiment what they did with the mice, but those other parts of the brain, and see, are those parts of the brain also developing so fast mm-hmm. that they lose memory? I don't know. Someday we may have a better answer, mm-hmm. but for now, We know none of us can remember our first birthday party.
No, that's for sure.
And sometimes this is an interesting thing about researching memory is we can trick ourselves into thinking we remember something maybe because we've heard the story so often mm-hmm. or we've seen pictures. Right. And so to us, it seems like a very real memory, but it's not. Yeah.
Oh, brains.
Brains are so interesting and fascinating, but we can't remember being a baby and we don't really know why, but we do know that it is totally normal.
Mm, great question.
And that is like, I thought so too. And it was very hard to answer because there was really not a very good answer, but you know,
we did our research.
So what are you reading right now, Liz?
Oh, I do have a book I wanted to share. It's called The Misfits, A Royal Conundrum. It's by Lisa Yee, and it has illustrations by Dan Santat. Although it is a chapter book, mm-hmm. it does have some illustrations. I don't normally book talk something that has a bunch of holds on it, but this one does have quite a few holds on it. You're going to want to put your name on the list for this one. The Misfits is the first in a series proposed, but just came out in January. The author, Lisa Yee, most recently wrote Maisie Chen's Last Chance, which was a Newbery Honor book. And Dan Santat illustrates a lot of books. His drawings are really distinctive. I always want to pick up a book when I see his illustrations because they are awesome. So, of course, I couldn't wait to crack open this book. Now, normally I'm an audiobook fan, but with the illustrations, I needed to get my hands on the actual book. So the story begins with the main character, Olive, being called to the principal's office.
Oh, no.
Sigh. The action begins immediately with Olive being swept away by her mom and enrolled in a boarding school. That's a school where you live at the school. It's called Rash, but not like a rash on your skin, a reforming arts school. The story takes place in San Francisco. And the Rash is on an island in the bay that used to be a prison. So immediately I was thinking of Alcatraz, yes. if you've ever heard of that, is an island. But the drawings show it as being, if you're a Harry Potter fan, like a Hogwarts type.
Okay.
Kind of like a mansion. Naturally, there's a cast of quirky characters with different backstories as to why they're at this boarding school. Olive actually takes a boat bus to get to the island, which also made me think of the Magic School Bus, how it can turn into all of these
anything.
Different.
Right. Yeah.
So it's quirky. You do have to use your imagination. We quickly find out that this school isn't exactly what it seems, and the students attending are actually going to form a secret spy squad to uncover a local jewelry thief.
Whoa.
Yeah. The chapters are pretty short, and they're sprinkled with illustrations of the characters and the funny situations that are described. They get into unbelievable situations. So if you like a story where you have to use your imagination, it's not realistic fiction. But who wouldn't want a chance to live on an island and solve a crime ring? If you like Spy School or City of Spies, those type books, I recommend The Misfits, A Royal Conundrum. It's available in print as an ebook and as an e-audiobook. Again, if you're going to listen to it, I recommend trying to get your hands on the actual physical book because the illustrations are fantastic. Check it out.
That sounds great.
It was a really good book. It was very cute. Very quirky.
Yeah. And I also love Dan Sandett.
Yeah, I do. I do love him. There, like you can tell it's him immediately just by his style of illustrations. Mm-hmm. They're great.
They are.
All right, Jill, what did you learn today?
Well, I think that my favorite thing I learned is that your fingerprints come back the same even after you injure them. Like if you have a burn, your fingerprints come back.
They come back. They always come back.
Wow.
I think that's fascinating.
I do too.
I learned about babies making memories. I can just picture a baby like pulling that little lever and watching the train go and feet kicking with delight.
I know. That's a great study.
I had no idea. So that was great. Thanks for sharing that information with us. All right. I think that is it for us today. Thanks for all of your amazing questions and helping us to learn more about our world, too. For more information or to send us your own question, head to kdl.org/stump. Tune into the next episode where we answer even more of your questions. A huge and special thanks to the KDL Programming Department, the KDL Marketing Department, and JD Dolinsky for our intro and outro music. Thank you.